Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Fed Speaks and No Leadership. So today was the conclusion of the two-day FOMC meeting with the Federal Reserve. So we'll get to that information, of course, market performance. But I do, at the start, at the top of this podcast, I just want to throw this out there, and this is in alignment with today's title as well, the no leadership aspect. And I've been stating this a little bit more frequently over the past couple of days or weeks, mentioning, once again, third-party candidates, especially the Libertarian candidate, Joe Jorgensen. She, again, is on all 50 state ballots and Washington, D.C. She deserves to be on the debate stage. If people are going to go into a voting booth or receive an absentee ballot and they see her name on that ballot in every state across this country, Americans deserve to hear what she has to say. It should be that simple. But the two-party system, they don't want any of it. They don't want any of it. Now, I understand, no matter how hard I try to persuade many of you in the audience, and this audience is diverse, and that's a good thing. I don't want to simply preach to the choir. I want diversity of opinion and ideas. I want my opinions and my analysis challenged. That's how we make it better. That's how we strengthen our arguments. That's how we learn something new. That's what this country has to get back to, because if you just hear that somebody's a Republican and you're a Democrat, you want nothing to do with them, and vice versa. This division has got to stop, and unfortunately, we have no leadership. Nobody is attempting to really unify and unite this country. But I do believe if people heard the platform of the Libertarian Party and heard what Dr. Joe Jorgensen has to say, a lot of people would think twice. But being pragmatic, even if that was the case and she was on the stage, I still know that despite that, with her efforts to persuade the American people and my efforts to persuade this audience to vote for third party, to not endorse Tweedledee or Tweedledum, that it's mainly going to fall on deaf ears, because you're still going to end up voting for the Republican candidate or the Democratic Party candidate. So I'm realistic, I'm pragmatic, I understand that's the case. You might agree with me in principle, and might think, yes, next time that's what I'm going to do. And I guess that's a step in the right direction, but it's not enough. But again, being pragmatic, you're still going to vote for the Republican, you're still going to vote for the Democrat. Okay. Can you at least meet me halfway? Can you at least do yourself and the country a service, a favor, by leaving the two-party system in registering as an independent, unaffiliated, or what I would advocate for as a Libertarian? But do your homework on the Libertarian Party, see if that's what you agree with, and I think most of you will. Because the two-party system has run its course, it has driven us too far into those respective silos, where you can't even have a conversation, where members of Congress can't even have a conversation with the other side. As soon as they hear that it's an idea of from the other party, they're done. They don't even want to go forward with it. Unless, of course, it's something that's really going to pile everything on and really screw the American people, like the Nobody Cares Act or the Patriot Act or all this other crap. Those types of bills, they can get together on. Anything that really starts to screw this country over, that puts a huge price tag on the backs of the American people, that's where they can come together and compromise. Anywhere else, not so much. But that's just further evidence of the decline and the decay of this country, unfortunately. So I know most of my arguments are going to fall on deaf ears. Even if you take it to heart, even if you believe it, you're going to shrug it off and you're still going to vote for Trump, you're still going to vote for Biden. Okay, I understand that. I understand that. At least meet me halfway, because it doesn't get more peaceful than that. It sends a message to the two-party system that they're on notice. And it sends a message to to third parties, and I hope particularly the Libertarian Party, that people want another option. And not only do they want another option, but they want the Libertarian voice to be heard and to be a part of the national conversation and a driving force behind the policies that are needed to turn this country around in the right direction. Because we are in decline, we are in decay. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. So please do that. Market performance on the back of the Federal Reserve's comments today, that of Chairman Jerome Powell. And again, he, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and now we got, you know, the other idiot here. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, no. It's one monkey after the next. And obviously the third monkey is Jerome Powell. He gave a terrible, terrible performance during his press conference. And I think he knows that the game is over. He knows that the Federal Reserve is out of ammunition, even though he was asked that very question, are you out of ammo? No, of course he's not going to say, yes, we're out of ammunition. So he said, no, we're not out of ammunition. There's still a lot we can do. There isn't. There isn't. Go to thecapitalnews.com and check out one of our Capital Economics presentations under the videos tab. Are central banks trapped? I believe that was the first video that we put out there, the first presentation we put together. It's not that long. Are central banks trapped? The answer is yes. That was over a year ago, I think last July. They've been out of ammunition. They are pushing on a string. This is all a con job. This is a confidence game. A confidence man is a con man. This is a con job. This is all a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and it's every single day in your face. With the bogus unemployment numbers that they throw down your throat, the headlines they just want you to focus on, don't go underneath the hood, don't take a look at what's really going on, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, just listen to me. Super V recovery, it's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. The game is over. There is no leadership. The world is crying out for leadership. It has been crying out for leadership. It's been crying out for the truth. It gets neither. Global protests prior to COVID-19, this is why. They're continuing. This is why. They're going to pick up. They are going to gain momentum. There is going to be massive political sea change. We ain't seen nothing yet. So he comes out, Jerome Powell starts making his comments. Of course, the Federal Reserve is keeping rates low. No change there. They're going to keep rates near the zero bound, at least until 2023. But, you know, they used to be data dependent. Now it's like, well, screw the data. We don't care. We're just going to be out there till 2023. Until, of course, something else happens, and then they'll change their minds again. They have zero credibility if you pay attention to them. Again, the problem is most of this country doesn't even know that they exist, let alone what they do. So it's one thing after the next with these guys. But if you do pay attention, and we do, zero credibility. None whatsoever. And the markets knew what was coming today. This is no surprise because you had, you know, a couple weeks ago, and we covered this too, it's the central bank retreat that usually takes place in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Due to COVID, it didn't take place. It was more of a virtual symposium. This decision was already made. So it's not like this was a big shock to the markets. It was just going to be a question of how Jay Powell further expressed and explained this policy. And he did a terrible job. The guy has a terrible poker face. He's clearing his throat all the time. I mean, the body language just isn't good. And this was not in person. This was a virtual event as well, so the reporters weren't in the room. Some of them asked a couple decent questions, but again, it was par for the course. And if they asked a tough question, Jay Powell was, of course, going to continue to dance around it and not hit the heart of it. But there were a couple good questions that we're going to focus on because at yesterday's podcast, I brought that up again. The only question I wanted asked was, did you discover the free lunch? What are the limitations of these policies? Because we're not hearing that there are any negative side effects whatsoever. So why can't you give everybody $1 million? If you're so concerned with the economic inequality that exists within this country, and it does exist, then why don't you just make everybody a millionaire and everybody's going to be perfectly fine? Because you tell us, the White House tells us, Congress tells us that there's no negative side effects. Congress loves it. Congress loves it because they don't have to go to the people and demand higher taxes. We can just print the money, which is inflation, which is the most devastating and destructive form of taxation that there is. So Congress loves it. The White House loves it because it continues to throw more money into the system. Stock markets get to go up. Thunder Thumbs gets to tweet out that the stock market's making new highs, blah, 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 blah. And the Federal Reserve loves it because that's their mandate, and they get to kick the can down the road too and not take any responsibility. So this unholy trinity between the Federal Reserve, Congress, and the White House is going to continue. Okay? And you are going to pay the cost of it. All right? And the vast majority of the, I don't even like using the word benefits, but I mean, there are a lot of people making a lot of money off of this because that's where the money goes. Follow the money, who benefits, that's who you know who the system is working for. And it is collapsing. It is collapsing, and it's collapsing globally. So Jay Powell's out there making his comments. Initially, you had the Dow Jones Industrial Average rally, and the S&P kind of followed suit. The Russell 2000, the small cap index, was kind of up for the day to begin with, but the NASDAQ, I guess, didn't get the memo. Surprisingly, of all the indexes, the NASDAQ didn't get the memo and was relatively flattened down for most of the day, and then it went down further, and even the major averages after their rally, you know, closed lower at the end of the day. It's because a lot of this stuff was already priced in. It's because there's nothing that Jay Powell can really do at this point. He is out of ammunition. He knows it. He wants the federal government to do more stimulus, quote-unquote stimulus, spend more money. Let's put it that way. Because the government doesn't have it. So they need a financier to buy up all of these junk notes that they would have to issue. Well, the market doesn't want these junk notes that Uncle Sam's going to issue. But the Federal Reserve will buy them up. Because that's the system, that's the game. So until Congress really passes another spending bill, the hands of the Federal Reserve are somewhat tied. Can they continue to go out and buy? Yeah, they can. They're going to continue to expand their balance sheet, make no mistake about it. We are, again, north of $7 trillion as of last week's data. We'll get the update tomorrow and have that discussion. But we are at $7 trillion on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. That was an increase of $3 trillion over this spring and summer, the drop of a hat. And recall, during the second quarter alone, the federal government had to issue $3 trillion worth of new debt alone, just for the second quarter alone. Didn't have to, but if they're going to pass the Nobody Cares Act, well, you know, it's got to be paid for somehow. We don't have the money. We only bring in about $3 trillion to begin with across the board with all taxes and tariffs, $3 trillion. Well, we just borrowed that alone in the second quarter. That's how devastating this is. And then you get Thunder Thumbs this morning tweeting out, we need more spending and go big. And he calls out the Republicans and he says, go big. Go ahead and do it. Because it's all going to come back to us anyway. Just go ahead and do it. Republicans have no leg to stand on whatsoever. Fiscal conservatives, nope, you're done. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see your mouth move when it comes to being fiscally responsible. You're done. You've lost all credibility. You're in the garbage heap with the Federal Reserve. You're done. And that doesn't support the Democrats either because they're Looney Tunes and they don't know basic math either. But at least they say, well, we got to tax you to pay for this stuff that we want. It's ridiculous, but at least they're trying to pay for it. Not going to make it, but at least they're trying to pay for it. But so everybody's in the garbage heap. That's why you got to leave them. They've left you a long time ago. Yeah, they can put on a show. They can put on their circus. They can turn on the music, put on the videos, make you cry, make you laugh, make you feel patriotic, and then you fall for the trap again, and then you scratch your head 4 years later. Why am I here again? How can this be? I voted for blah, 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 blah. They did a good show. Yeah, that's all it is. It's a show. It's a con job. You fell for it. Don't do it. That's where we are. Wake up, please. wake up. So that's the game that's being played. All these shenanigans. You got Trump again out there saying do more. And he said that today, this evening during his press conference in the White House, calling out the Republicans, let's do more. Basically, very confident in himself and saying, yeah, I'm going to be able to get the Republicans to come on board and to do more spending. Because again, he's going back to his line. It wasn't their fault. And this time he's referring to the people. Earlier this year, the pandemic not being their fault typically referred to major corporations. Okay? Especially the airlines, which are running out of money, which are in a lot of trouble. Basically, they've across the board have stated if air travel does not return to some sort of normal level by the end of this month, there are going to be massive layoffs within that industry. And at the end of this month was just an arbitrary date because that's when their quote-unquote bailout money expires. So that's their deal. If we give you money, you can't involuntarily lay people off. You can give them a buyout package so they can voluntarily leave, but you can't just say massive layoffs, you're gone. Can't do that. So those are going to be good paying jobs that are going to be gone in October almost immediately. Unless, of course, the government wants to give them more money, okay, which means you. So Trump's out there. It's not their fault. It's not the people's fault. We got to give them more money. Even though it's your money, we're going to have to go to the Banana Republic printing press. So Jay Powell is going to get his wish. He's going to be able to print more money, buy more junk debt from the federal government. Balance sheet will go up. God only knows what. I mean, even if you just focused right now from an annualized basis as to what the Federal Reserve is purchasing in U.S. debt, mortgage-backed securities, what have you, across the spectrum, that would be an additional $1.2 trillion. I mean, these numbers are huge, and everybody is growing numb to them. Before you know it, we're going to be in quadrillions. And people, at that point, you're not even going to be able to comprehend what's going on. People can't even comprehend it now. I'm not claiming to comprehend it. These numbers are astronomical. You just have to have an understanding and the respect for the size and magnitude of these numbers to know that this is completely ridiculous. This is completely unsustainable. And of course, you and I, the taxpayer, is going to pay for it all. And finally, there was a question today to Jerome Powell, where a reporter asked him about this Main Street lending facility that you have. About $600 billion. There's only about $1 billion or so that has been used. Main Street lending facility. $1 billion. Out of all that money that's sitting in there that can be used for small businesses. Only $1 billion. You know, we talked the other day, small business pulse check. Article, I believe, was out of Axios, who was focused on the Goldman Sachs small business survey. There was some good news in that survey, and there was some bad news. And unfortunately, some of the good news was sort of straddling the line. Check out that podcast if you missed it. Small business pulse check. So what's going on here? Why isn't more of this emergency facility that has been established, why isn't it being taken advantage of? Because we know the numbers. We know how many small businesses have closed their doors permanently. We know how many small businesses, at least to a decent degree, we know how bad the situation remains across the country. Why is only $1 billion going out? Well, Jay Powell says, well, you know, there's been some mishaps, some miscommunications between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department and the banks themselves. Because the banks, or I'm sorry, I take this back. This was not Jay Powell saying this. This was the reporter elaborating on his question that he had sources that was saying that this was some of the background. So excuse me on that. Again, this is the reporter providing some background saying that there was miscommunication between the Fed, the Treasury Department, and the banks who would be administering this money. And according to this reporter's sources, The Treasury Department basically told the banks, minimize losses. We don't want any losses. Well, you're in a pandemic. You have various state orders that have shut businesses down completely or significantly. And now you have the Treasury Department, allegedly, and I believe this to be true because if only $1 billion is out, then I you know, connect the dots, people. Oh, well, yeah, you can't, we don't want any losses. So that, by definition, is going to minimize the amount of loans that are made to small businesses that are struggling, that it wasn't their fault. They were not deemed essential businesses, even though they sold the same goods or offered the same services of a Walmart or a Lowe's or a Home Depot. Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, they can stay open. They're essential. But if you're a small business and you offer those same goods, services, nope, you got to close down. Connect the dots here, ladies and gentlemen. Who does the system work for? And they said, don't give them any money. Well, not like that. We minimize losses. We're in the greatest depression. These companies aren't going to survive. They're shut down by state order. They're not going to make money. They're not going to be able to pay them back. So that means you're going to have losses. Even though we were told several months ago with those relatively frequent updates to the Nobody Cares Act and how it was being administered and rolled out, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said, yes, we are already calculating losses on a net-net basis. We already, that is built in. That is what we were expecting. On a net-net basis, we will suffer losses. And of course, the Federal Reserve cannot lose. Because even if they do suffer losses, they are backstopped by the taxpayer. They are backstopped by you and me. What a game. What a system. Go vote for them. Because that's exactly what you're going to get. More of the same. So I commend that reporter, that journalist, for asking that question and for providing that background that the banks are basically told, minimize your losses. And then the answer from Jay Powell was basically in agreement with that. Well, you know, the banks, they're tightening up here. They don't want to make bad loans. You know, the banks don't want to make bad loans. Are you kidding me? The banks don't want to make bad loans. They've never done this before. The subprime crisis and all that jazz, that's never happened before. They don't make bad loans. Have you looked at the corporate debt market? You think all of these zombie companies are going to be able to sustain themselves? They don't make bad loans. This is the best Jay Powell can come up with. He's sinking. He's sinking. He is drowning in the debt that he throws out into the system. This is a sinking ship. And, you know, the rats, they're abandoning ship, but not before they get on the lifeboats and not before they take all the food and everything else, leaving the scraps to everybody else if you're lucky enough to get them. And as we stated earlier this week, following that NPR and Harvard survey, we know half the country is broke. It's heartbreaking. It's a travesty. So simply ask the question again, if you're concerned about income inequality, which the Federal Reserve creates, they'll never admit to that, but they do, then why don't you just give everybody $1 million? Or, I mean, pick a number. I mean, even $100,000, $50,000 would be life-changing money to people who are broke. Why can't you, I mean, make the number $50,000 if you want to be more, quote-unquote, reasonable. If you think $1 million, you know, just it's being a little bit hyperbolic there. Make it $50,000. It'd be life-changing for these people. Nah, I don't know about that. We're just going to keep putting the trillions. We're going to throw it into the system. We got to stabilize markets. And that was his phrase, by the way, today. These actions are to stabilize markets. No, Mr. Powell, they should be to stabilize the economy. To stabilize the economy. And again, the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate of full employment and price stability. Yet, the Federal Reserve continues to put out there that they want to target and achieve inflation at 2%. And if it goes over 2%, that's perfectly okay. Because it's average inflation, whatever this means. You're not going to find this in any reputable economics textbook, okay? Because it's nowhere to be seen. They're making this stuff up as they go to justify their existence, to justify their fraud, their corruption, their nepotism. It's all this is. It's a big game, and you're going to pay the bill. You already are, and you're going to continue to do it, and you ain't seen nothing yet. So because they claim that inflation has been so low, below their 2% target for so long, well, I guess it's okay, according to them, if inflation runs hotter. And then it'll just sort of average itself out. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? You have job security? You on a fixed income? Are you on Social Security? What happens if your utility bill goes up? What happens if the price at the pump goes up? What happens if your grocery bill goes up? You okay with that running a little hot? You going to be able to tolerate that? We know the answer is no. Half the country's broke. Every little bit of a difference in the higher price level is going to cause that much more of a problem for these individuals and for these families. But that's what's going to happen, because you have to focus on the necessities. The Apple Watches and all these other little gadgets and gizmos, I don't care what the price of those things are, because most people are going to be focused on the necessities. What are the price of those goods and services? And they're going up. They're going up. So that's some of that market performance, how it's put out, not what's going on right now. We have the dollar index up 93.513, a little bit of a rally in the dollar, and a decrease, corresponding decline in the euro, the British pound, the Aussie dollar, New Zealand dollar, Japanese yen, pretty much across the board. We got some dollar strength going on right now. Overnight markets, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.8%. The S&P 500 is down 0.9%. NASDAQ 100 is also down 1 percentage point at the time of the podcast. Cash trade in Japan is down 0.6%. Mixed bag across the pond in Europe. Cash trade in Australia is also down 1 percentage point. On the share front, the big boys, Apple, lost 3%. Tesla gave back 1.7%. Microsoft also gave back 1.8%. Amazon gave back 2.5%. Alphabet, the parent company of Google, gave back 1.5%. And Facebook was also down for the day, giving back 0.3 percentage points. A strong rally today with oil, although that is starting to pull back. Also right now, we have WTI trading at $39.64 per barrel. Brent is at $41.75. Natural gas pulled back as well throughout the day, $2.24. Not too much action or excitement during the day trade with respect to gold and silver. However, both are trading down as well at the time of the podcast. Spot gold is down 1%, trading at $1,939 an ounce. Silver spot is down 1.5%, trading at $26.80. To round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 0.67%. On this note, I just want to make comment on the MOVE Index, M-O-V-E, the MOVE Index. This is akin to the VIX, the Volatility Index. Of course, the VIX corresponds to the S&P 500. The MOVE Index corresponds to the bond market, which is, of course, a much, much bigger market. It really tells the story. That's where you get your best signals, at least historically speaking. We have been range-bound, very tight consolidation for quite a while within the bond market, the U.S. bond market. And the MOVE Index is nearing an all-time low, where the all-time low, I believe, was experienced back in, it was this summer. I think it was in the month of July, but I could be wrong on that. But nonetheless, it was this year. And as I have stated many times before, in addition to my volatility model, which just looks at the stock market, but it's very simplistic. I like simple. When you have low levels of volatility, especially for a prolonged period of time, history tells us that that is the calm before the storm. So the fact that you have the MOVE Index getting back to an all-time low tells me this is the calm before the storm. when you have the S&P 500 with the stock market hitting all-time highs recently, of course, but you still have the VIX trading in the 20s, 25, 26 points, that too is basically breaking records, because one would assume, basing this on history, that if you had the S&P 500 reaching all-time highs, that the VIX would be much, much lower. Before the massive sell-off in the spring, the VIX was at, I think, 13, 14 points. So we are well above that and still hanging on in that range. So this is some signaling, and we talked about that not too long ago. The S&P 500 making an all-time high with the VIX as high as it was. This is history in the making. Something is not right. Something is broken. We know this. We understand it. We're talking about the structural issues. We talk about all this money printing. We talk about how the Federal Reserve, the federal government, in conjunction with other governments and central banks, are pushing on a string. This is a con job, trying to convince you that everything is A-OK, that they are in control. They are not. There is no truth. There is no leadership. You continue to have the president contradicting members within his own administration. Again, prime example today in his press conference, because you had the CDC director, Dr. Redfield, testifying today before Congress, stating that masks are imperative to wear, that they can save lives, they can control this spread. And he said, dare I even say, that masks can be more effective than a vaccine. Of course, Trump did not like that. He contradicted his CDC director and said, well, yeah, he misunderstood the question. The CDC director later tweets out, not necessarily coming out in direct terms saying, no, Mr. President, I understood fully, but basically read between the lines, I'm sticking with my statement. So again, this is going back and forth. The president is trying to convince people that there is going to be a vaccine by the end of October, maybe very early in November, that's going to be readily available to everybody right off the bat. Again, contradicting a lot of people within his administration. Again, the CDC director telling Congress under oath, expect vaccinations if they are ready, if everything goes well, that you can have enough ready for the entirety of the United States, end of the second quarter into the third quarter of next year. Trump is basically making the argument that as soon as a vaccine is created and approved, boom, presto, pretty much everybody's going to have it. Now, it's prioritize maybe to healthcare workers first and those that are older or have comorbidity, okay, but then it's going to be ramped up beautifully. You know, this is part of the problem. This is the no leadership part. This is this communication cluster, you know what, that we have been experiencing. The president could have done more. The president had the opportunity to use this pandemic as a way to unite this country, to look after each other, to practice social distancing and do a whole host of things that could have been done. Now you got a lot of people who, you know, they get in fistfights with each other if somebody's wearing a mask and somebody isn't. Now, of course, those people have to be responsible for their own actions, but, you know, this is a failure of leadership. There is no leadership. You know, I know this podcast is running a little bit long, but this is important to me because I'm sick and tired of it. We talked about the social disorder, how people get, you know, just thrown into their silos. They're just looking at for what they want to hear, looking for what they want to see, and then they like it, and it circulates within their group of friends who are like-minded, and, you know, it's got somebody's picture, and there's words in front of it. So clearly that was their quote. I mean, it had to be them. It's on the internet. It's their picture. There's a sentence. That quote has to be attributed to them. It's the truth. And many times it isn't. But once it's out of the gate, that's it. You know, a lie will travel around the world before the truth has a chance to get out of the gate. That's the problem. And this is only getting worse, and the president is not stepping up to the plate to combat this. In fact, he's very much part of the problem, unfortunately. I take no pleasure in saying this. But just take, for example, George W. Bush. Because he came into office very controversially, right? Highly contested election. Half the country doesn't like it, doesn't believe he's the right, you know, the right president. But he's there. In 2001, we slip into a recession. Obviously, we have 9/11, which we, you know, just had that memorial, that anniversary. He rose to the occasion. Even Bush knew to rise to the occasion. And the country knew what was going on. And a lot of those political differences could be put aside. And people forgot about being a Republican or a Democrat. And they remembered what it meant to be an American. And it is a true shame that it takes something as devastating as 9/11 to do that. But it did. But it did. Could you imagine if instead George W. Bush came out and said, well, you know, this is a terrorist attack. It was bad, this, that, and the other. But all the blue states out there, all the blue states, you better be careful because, you know, the incompetent governors and mayors that are running around in your states, the blue states, because you're so weak and incompetent, it's most likely if something happens, it's got another terrorist attack's going to happen in a blue state. Could you imagine the outrage if he had said that? Can you imagine? And rightly so. And back then, the Republican Party would have been the first to condemn it. Now this Republican Party is non-existent. It is hostage to Trump. He knows it. That's why he comes out and says, yeah, we're going to do more spending. I'll get him to do it. Because there's no backbone. There's no spine. Could you imagine that? Because Trump said that today. He said there's more cases in the blue states. It's more out of control in the blue states. Because of the incompetence and the idiots and the, you know, whatever word he's using. How is this going to unite the country? It's not. It's not. And when you simply just understand math and some common sense, and you look at the population in this country, biggest cities are in what you can consider blue states, I guess. New York with New York City, California with Los Angeles, Illinois with Chicago. The survey that we focused on, the four largest cities, Texas with Houston. Of course, that's more Republican. But it's the same statistics across the board. It cuts both ways. You got a pandemic, got big cities, that's where people are traveling to. That's where they live. They're on top of each other in big high-rise apartments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It makes sense that that's where a lot of the cases are going to be. This is no leadership. This is finger-pointing. He is not the man for the hour. He had every opportunity to rise to the occasion, and he has failed. And he has failed. And this is not an endorsement of Joe Biden. I said at the top of this podcast, I don't like either of them. I've said that for months. Neither of these guys are it, but nobody is going to give the Libertarian Party, or anybody else for that matter, a voice, an opportunity. And that, too, is another symptom and sign of a declining country. Because we're supposed to be diverse in our thought and our opinions. We're supposed to be a country of, by, and for the people. But unfortunately, we're not. It's red or blue. Those are your only choices, unfortunately. Fed speaks and no leadership. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.